cool.
We have with us our special guest that I'm really proud to have as my United States Congressman.
And mine.
You know, the word experience gets tossed around in Washington, D.C. a lot. This gentleman can say, yes, I do indeed have experience. And we're proud to present to you right here live on Equal Time, Congressman from the 6th District of Washington State, Norm Dix.
Frank.
Congressman Dix, welcome to Equal Time. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Frank. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. It's great to be with you.
Well, last time we had you on, Congressman Dix, you were on a cell phone out in your district in some of the Netherlands out there. We broke up, so you're on a landline this time, right?
Yes, on a good landline, and we're glad to be able to talk to you, and there's a lot going on in Congress.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
A lot going on in Washington State, and it's good to be on your show.
Hey, thanks for having us. Now, listen, we can't let it go by. We just have to talk to you a little bit about the tanker rancor. Last week we had Congressman Inslee on. We got a bit of his take as a member of the Commerce Committee. Now, give us just a brief update as to where that situation is with the GAO and from the defense appropriations standpoint.
Well, first of all, Boeing has protested the decision. And I must tell you, I've read over this decision, and it just doesn't make any sense. The Air Force said it wanted a medium-sized tanker, and instead they picked one that is larger than the KC-10, which is our existing tanker.
Right.
We also have the KC-135s, and the 767 X would have been the perfect airplane for the Air Force. So why they did this is beyond comprehension. Number two, they refused, under pressure from John McCain, they refused to take into account the fact that subsidies are given to EADS to produce these planes. And the very airplane, the A330, received about $2.5 billion in subsidy. So,
whoa,
you know, they can bid a little lower on one of these competitions. The other problem we've got is that the difference in cost. Think about fuel prices.
Yeah.
This airplane is 53% larger than the Boeing 767. Therefore, it's going to cost more fuel. They anticipate that in over 25 years, that could run up to $20 billion.
Depending on the price of jet.
Right, and then maintenance. If it's a bigger airplane, there's maintenance. But what really bothers me, here is EADS, which is, they get paid in dollars and have to pay their suppliers in euros. And the dollar's dropping, and unfortunately,
yes,
and the euros are getting stronger and stronger. So that means they're losing, every time the dollar goes down 10%, they lose a substantial amount of money in euros.
And they're getting less bang for the buck, so to speak.
Exactly. Well, and they just don't have enough money to pay their people. And also, the one that really gets me really irritated is that here we've got a plant in Everett, Washington with trained workers, and yet they were marked down in terms of risk for a situation where we're going to bring in the wings, the tail, and the fuselage from three different European countries, and then put this all together in Alabama in a plant that doesn't exist with no workers.
My
I mean,
God.
They'll have them by the time they get producing, but unless we can stop this. Now, it's my intention. I'm vice chairman of defense, and I'm working very close with Congressman Jack Murtha.
Right.
You know, we're looking this thing over very carefully. And, I think there's a good chance that we can stop this in the House of Representatives. That's what we're going to try to do. I mean, someone's got to look at the national interest here. First of all, we're giving all in election year, presidential election year, giving all these jobs when we're in a recession to the Europeans. They would never even allow us to bid on something like this.
That's
let
exactly
alone win the competition.
You know, this is just—it's just so screwy in so many ways. And
the more I look into this, the more you find there's issue after issue after issue. It's almost like the Air Force, and I hate to say this, was just basically had their mind made up and did this regardless of all the issues, industrial base, a national interest, keeping this technology in the U.S. company. everybody else in the world will want these aerial refuelers too. So we're going to lose a big international market, as well as the ability to build this for the United States.
Well, as Congressman Inslee pointed out last week, somewhere within the United States, we are suing through the World Trade Organization on that issue about the subsidies.
Right. Our Federal Trade Representative has brought a suit on behalf of the United States against the EU and the World Trade Organization. And we have a very good chance that they're going to hold that the subsidy on this airplane was illegal. You know, so, I mean, it is totally preposterous that we would give this to these countries when they have received subsidy. It's just not right.
I can't, words fail me, and that's unusual, but they fail me. And Congressman Inslee mentioned that they're going to bring in this foreign plane. And the revetment issue, my God, that's another basic infrastructure issue. That's basic. It won't fit in our current revetments.
Well, that's right. The hangars.
Yeah.
They're going to have new hangars. The National Guard has written a letter to Senator Bond complaining that they're going to have to, that they don't have any hangars of the size necessary to take care of these tankers. And they do a lot of the flying of these tankers.
Congressman, I've got a question for you.
Right.
You keep saying you think you can stop and maybe we can stop. Isn't this really a national security issue, and why can't we just stop it? Why did we even allow it to happen to start with?
Well, here's why. Because, one, we won this competition. I always tell this. I forgot today. We won this competition 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was buy 80, lease 20. Okay, that was approved by the Defense Department, by the Air Force, by the House Senate Armed Services Committee, House Senate Appropriations Committee. Everybody approved it. Then Boeing did an internal investigation and found out that its CFO, Mike Sears, and Darlene Druyan. Now Darlene Druyan was the top acquisition official at the Air Force, and she left 6 months before the final decision was made on this. But because of this, the vitriolic complaints of John McCain,
here we go again.
The Air Force decided, and the Secretary of Defense canceled the whole deal.
Right.
So then we've gone through 4 years, which is the cost is going up and everything else, and McCain again insisted on a competition. Well, there's only one other company that can compete, and that's EADS, Airbus. And then when we got into the competition started, there was a whole bunch of things that this large airplane could not do, and they changed the model so that they could do it, and they had sent out a request for information that included the question about subsidies, and then Airbus and Northrop Grumman had a conniption fit. And McCain again wrote letters up there saying you can't take into account subsidy, and the Air Force yielded to that because the other person said, I mean, the EADS Airbus said they wouldn't compete.
Well,
if this wasn't taken out. So now, to answer your question, I think it's up to Congress to say this has been flawed, it's wrong, and we're going to stop it.
Yeah, because I totally agree. I can see with competition and all of that and capitalism and the whole bit. But this is a military plane to be used by our military and our safety. There shouldn't be any competition. If Boeing is the only American country to be able to do this, then they should be the company to do it.
Right. I agree with that completely. And that's how we started. The reason we did this was because after 9/11, there was a tremendous drop in airline traffic. About 25%, and we needed some way to sell airplanes and to protect our industrial base. Boeing is the largest manufacturer of products in our country,
yes.
And so we did this for just that reason. And there wasn't any competition, and Boeing they negotiated a good deal with. The Air Force negotiated a very good contract. In fact, in that contract, Boeing promised that if they ever sold the 767 for less to any commercial customer or any customer, that they would give the Air Force that same price. So this was not some sweetheart deal by any stretch. And as I told you, the woman who was involved with Mike Sears left the government 6 months before the deal was set. We should have done that. We'd have the planes by now.
Yeah, we'd be up and running.
We'd be up and running. And instead, we've dragged this thing out now. The Air Force has made a terrible decision. Let me just go back to the decision. The Air Force came up and testified in 2006 that it wanted a medium-sized tanker. That's what they wanted.
Right.
Well, that's not what the A330 is.
It's
they
huge.
Also gave me a briefing paper in December saying they wanted a medium-sized tanker. So the bottom line is, they misled the Congress. They misled the American people. They misled themselves.
I think we have to draw the Department of Defense into this. I think it's not just Air Force. This comes from higher up than
And I must tell you, the individual who replaced Pete Aldridge in his capacity, John Young, a person I've known for a long time, worked for Senator Nunn, I think just dropped the ball here in his review of this. Nobody used any judgment.
That's a bad
thing. There was a lack of judgment on industrial base and a lack of judgment on the national security grounds, that we should have built this thing in the United States. And the idea that 1,000 people putting together something down in Alabama, I'm worried that it won't even work, that they're going to have a hard time doing this. So there's another good reason to stop it.
Congressman Dix, can you hold through us with...
Yeah, sure.
Now, we're going to go to break here, and when we come back, we want to drop the tanker rancor and get into the interior. Can you
Absolutely.
Talk about it?
Absolutely. I'll
Excellent.
Be here.
All right, we'll be right back with our wonderful guest, Congressman Norm Dix from this beautiful 6th District of the state of Washington, after these wonderful words from our even more wonderful sponsors. We're back live right here with Congressman Norm Dix from the beautiful 6th District of Washington State. Are you still with us, Norm?
Yes, I am, Frank.
Now,
good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too, and we thank you so much for your time, sir. We wanted to, you know, everybody knows of Norm Dix as the guy he's a go-to guy for military and defense issues and stuff like that, but you are also very, very actively involved within the Interior Committee. Is that correct?
That's right. It only took me 30 years to become chairman of the Interior and Environment Appropriations Subcommittee.
Well, see, now, listen.
That's one of the things about seniority. You know I'm against term limits.
Well, so are we in the 6th District.
Right.
Listen, we want you to be the Robert Byrd of the House. We want you to stay till you're over 90 years old. Are you willing to commit to that?
I'm not willing to commit to that. I've worked a lot with Senator Byrd. He's a good man.
He is. He's a great
How
guy.
How is he doing?
He's okay?
Very sick right now. There's a lot of concern.
Yeah. Well, our prayers are with him. Yeah.
Right. And now, let's talk just a little bit about the green part, not the olive drab part of Norm Dix's service. When you got a load of President Bush's Healthy Forest Initiative, what was your reaction to that?
Well, I was skeptical, and let me just say, though, that this administration has been one of the worst on the environment in history. Not the Park Service. I'll give Dirk Kempthorne, our good friend from Idaho, as Secretary of Interior, has fought hard for the national parks. But since 2001, and you know who became president then, the interior budget has been cut by 17%.
Jeez.
EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which is our clean air, clean water, been cut by 29%. And the Forest Service has been cut by 35% if you take fire out. And fire has gone from about 13% to in the 90s up to 48% last year fighting fire. So they don't get to go to FEMA. So they have to take the money out of their roads and trails and pruning and thinning and all these accounts, and then they use it for firefighting.
That's why
there's all this concern out here in the state, that because the Forest Service made a commitment that they would fix over 10 years the roads and trails that are causing problems in our salmon bearing streams. And I created a program last year called the Forest Legacy Program, which was to go out and fix these problems. But I Bush made me take $1 billion out of my bill, so we wound up with $39 million nationwide. And our state only got about $5 or $6 million out of that. Not nearly what we needed to you know, they'd probably need $10 million a year to just stay even in Washington state. So,
and if they did the maintenance that needed done, we wouldn't have the forest fires we're having.
Yeah, well, and here's the real problem. 1% of the fires turn into mega fires. And that's where, and I want to give them their due, that's where taking out the understorage, taking in the dry timberlands, taking out and separating the trees by thinning and pruning, does help.
Yes.
on lessening the impact of the forest fires. If you don't do it, if the trees are all together, the fires get hotter and hotter, and it destroys the soil and makes it impossible to regenerate those trees. So there is something to doing pruning, thinning, and other adaptive management in order to lessen the impact on fires.
I read an article a few years ago about the logging practices on Fort Lewis, for example. They've sustained a healthy harvest procedure out there and still maintain their forests. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I worked with Volney Warner all the way back in the late 70s on that. He was one of the most environmentally conscious commanders out there at the 9th Infantry Division. And they have had a good program. They do a lot of thinning, which is the right way to do it. Because when you thin, the trees that remain get bigger faster. And what we're trying to do is create habitat for the marbled murrelet and the spotted owl and other creatures. And so the thinning does make sense. And we can use the wood either for wood chips. We can use it for fuel. A lot of the mills now are creating their own energy and their own power, and so that's the right way to do it. But it's still very controversial because some people are against any logging whatsoever, and I simply think that's wrong. You've got to do the thinning in order to grow these trees faster and also we got to have some lumber too. You know,
houses built with?
Yeah, a lot of people in Chicago think that lumber just magically shows up in the lumber yard.
It grows at Home Depot.
It was a tree.
Right.
You know.
Well, it is a renewable resource, one of the few that we have. And
thinning
is different from clear cutting.
One of the other things I did on the Interior Subcommittee this year, you know, the Great Lakes and the Chesapeake Bay, we're getting about 30 or 40 million a year for efforts to clean up those bodies of water. And you know, our Puget Sound was only getting about $1 million, which I thought was ridiculous. Since we're the second largest estuary, and since we have a serious problem, so I put $20 million in, which remained in the budget, to help get this Puget Sound partnership initiative, started. And I must say that I did this before the governor decided to appoint my son as the head of the executive director.
I'm glad that you added that.
I wanted to always make sure everybody knows what the situation was.
Let me ask
and,
you.
And I wouldn't have, and I would have done it no matter what, because it's the right thing to do. We've got to have the resources to clean up the Sound and Hood Canal.
I am an enrolled member of the Blackfeet Tribe of Indians. In other words,
right.
I'm an Indian, and I can actually prove it.
South Dakota?
No, this is actually North Central Montana.
Okay.
And we've seen the Bush administration attacking Indian health services, school projects, and community colleges on reservations. And I don't know how many people understand this, but the Department of Indian Affairs actually is under the purview of the Interior Department, right?
That's right. And I have jurisdiction over both the BIA and the Indian Health Service.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. They cut money for education, for health care, urban health care clinics. There are like 32 of them around the country. They zeroed that entire budget out. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The Johnson O'Malley funds, which helped a lot of kids, possibly yourself, Frank, in terms of education, they zeroed that out.
Yep.
The housing improvement program, anybody who's been to a reservation knows that they need to improve the housing. They took the money out for that. I mean, this is one of the most brutal budgets I've ever seen in terms of support for the tribes, and I'm trying to put that money back in and also to make sure that we have adequate health care. And then dental care, which is absolutely critical.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people, you know, it's It's like I was talking to a gentleman in Washington, D.C. It's like all these years for the Puyallups and the Muckleshoots, for example. It's all those damn Indians that lay around on welfare and get drunk all day, every day. Then they build these casinos and get this enormous amount of revenue coming in. And now the white people are going, oh, those damn Indians, they you know, I go into those casinos and they suck me dry. You can't win if you're an Indian.
Well, and you know, only a few tribes of out of the hundreds of tribes, there's maybe like 10% that have casinos, and some of those are just marginal.
Right.
We have the examples of that in our own state.
Yeah.
Where some of them are really big rollers, like the Muckleshoots and the Tulalips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the rest of them, I mean, the Puyallups, I think, do pretty well.
Pretty good.
But the rest of them, maybe the Squaxins do pretty well.
Yeah.
But the rest of them are struggling. And so, you know, the tribes need help. We have a trust responsibility. I'm trying to help. But the problem I've got is the president, on my budget I just told you about,
yep,
cut it in his budget request by $1 billion below last year's level. And it took all this money out of the BIA and the Indian Health Service.
It must be extremely frustrating for you.
Yeah. It is painful.
Well, it's my understanding he's cut pretty much all social services to some degree. And
that's right.
Put it all in the defense budget.
Yeah, it all goes in the defense budget or tax cuts.
Right.
The richest people in the country. And I'm not against rich people.
No.
But because a lot of them do create a lot of jobs for our country. But the bottom line is, you know, it's tax. What they have spent their money on is tax cuts and defense. And fighting these wars, and it's just gotten to a point where we're in very fragile economic times, and we've got to hopefully get through this. There's very serious economic downturn. You know, Greenspan said it was the worst economic crisis since the end of World War II.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Very serious. That's
we're
pretty
living
serious.
It.
But Greenspan approved his tax cuts when it happened.
Well, I know it, but
when even he
now.
Says that, then you know we're in trouble.
Yeah.
That's right. We know.
Now we just.
Bernanke is pretty good, too. He's trying, he's cutting the interest rates. He's doing all the right things.
Let me ask you.
Trying to restore confidence. I supported the takeover of Bear Stearns. You had to do that.
Yeah.
You can't have one of these major banks fail. There would have been a run on the banks,
right,
like in the 30s, and it would have been chaotic and disastrous.
Let me ask you one. We're up against this segment. We'll let you go with this, but I got to ask you one question.
Yeah.
And God, once again, Congressman Dix, we so much appreciate you coming on the air with us today. But
glad to do it.
Yeah,
I wanted to. We just came up upon 5 years of our adventure into Iraq. Do
right.
you see anything on the horizon? Do you see anything that's
well,
giving you any
hope? Well, I mean, basically, I think we have got to turn this. We got to, one, help the Iraqis, train their people. We got to help them with economic development. And lastly, we've got to turn this over to them and have a phased withdrawal where we still keep special forces and others in adjacent countries that can go in if al-Qaeda gets out of control. But we can't afford to continue this because we're ruining the military and we're going to put ourselves in such debt. I mean, people forget we're borrowing $12 to $15 billion a month to finance these two wars. And,
from China.
And we don't need any other problems, right?
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
We need friends. We don't need problems.
That's right.
China can be a friend, I think.
Well, Congressman Dix, once again, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for appearing with us.
Thank you so much.
Good luck and Godspeed back in D.C. Congressman Norm Dix, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back after these wonderful words from our even more wonderful sponsors.